So hello everybody and welcome to our office hours call for the month of July 2020. And this is our very first call on Zoom. We've been doing these for many years on the Instant Teleseminar platform. And I was just commenting earlier on that I can actually see who's on the call. I can actually see your names and now I can see your faces if you choose to share your screen there. So I'm super excited to have you guys here. And to see who's here, Nia, haven't seen you in a long time. It's awesome. It's awesome. So these are our calls. Good to see you. Yay. These are our calls for your personal stuff. So I see several practitioners on these calls. And these are not calls for you to ask questions about your patients or your clients. It's a place for you to come and ask questions about your own personal health. And we like to stick to that. You guys have plenty of opportunity to ask questions about clients. So go ahead. And if you have any questions, just you can raise your hand like this. Hi, if you have a camera on, or you can go to your name. So click participants at the bottom and find your name. And then there should be a little more button that you can say, I can't tell because it doesn't let me raise my hand because I'm the host. But I think, or over your picture, you can just say, raise your hand, and that will raise your hand. But this works too. If it gets to be a lot of people, it's harder to see the people waving their hands. And then you can also type questions into the chat. So I'm gonna open up the chat and make sure that's available. So super excited to have you here. Hopefully everybody's doing well, and let's get started. So who has questions? Who has areas they wanna be supported in? Any questions at all? Go ahead and raise your hand and I'll open up your line, or just open up your line. And if it's a silent point, just open up your line. Go ahead, Mia. Unmute.
Hi.
Hi, Mia.
Hi. So hi, Dr. Unary. It's been a long time. So good to see you.
Yeah.
I guess so about my own health, I've been noticing that my ankles have been swelling and, you know, I'm working from home and I'm not walking around as much and sitting for long stretches of time. So I'm hoping that's as simple as why it's happening and not something more major, but like what can I do to sort of test if it's something, you know, related? Cause I've been researching, you know, how you start Googling and, you know, it says it could be like heart, liver, kidney, like.
Yeah. All the scary stuff, right? So first of all, do you have a blood pressure cuff?
No, my mom might have one where she lives. But
everybody should have a blood pressure cuff because first of all, you know, to rule out kidney, right? You want to rule out congestive heart failure. You also want to rule out what kind of swelling is it, right? So go down to your ankles and start poking in there. And
it doesn't stay.
It doesn't stay.
It's not pitted. Okay. No, it's not pitted.
So it's less likely to be something like congestive heart failure. That's usually a pitting edema. Thyroid. Thyroid can also cause swelling in the ankles, mixed edema. Oh. And that's usually not a pitting edema. So that's something to look at too. Yeah, but it comes right back out. And how long has it been going on?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Was there any shift in your diet, shift in your environment, shift in your exposures?
Environment. Yeah. I went from one apartment to another apartment.
Okay. So is there anything environmentally in that apartment that could be causing some irritation to you?
Well, it's a great question. Because I had very big, I think maybe you knew, like very severe problems with puffing eyes 2 years ago. And I had been doing renovation work on the apartment. So there was speculation it was from some product used for the renovation, you know, maybe polyurethane or something.
Yeah.
And I'm back in that apartment. So yeah. And, you know, and I all, when I moved back here 2 weeks ago, I also started getting very, very stiff body everywhere, stiff everywhere. And you know, talk about environment. I also did a very silly thing and I bought some, you know, the brand of cleaner Fantastic because I just wanted to like deep clean. Oh. And it could be a reaction to that. I mean, the stiffness, I think.
Yeah, it could very well be. Lynn, you look like you're saying something, but you're not, we're not hearing you.
I was talking to myself, but I just said throw it out.
Yeah, it sounds like something in that environment, right? If you had that and you just moved back in here and you had a problem with it before, it could be some of the stuff that they used to renovate, to fix it up. Fantastic, certainly. That's really toxic. So that's what I'd be looking at, especially since it's not just the ankle swelling. There's other areas swelling, right? Joints are swelling stiffer.
It cleared up, thank God. I think maybe it was just because it was this one day of using Fantastic. So I think it you know, over 10 days, my body detoxed it out. Maybe it's, you know, it's a speculation.
Right. But there may be something still in the environment. It, has the swelling gotten better or worse since this whole thing started?
Well, the ankle swelling for sure is worse by the end of the workday and better in the morning. So that's what leads me to believe it's more about not moving the body enough during the daytime.
Right, and not moving enough. So it looks like you're standing now. Are you standing or sitting?
Yeah, standing. Yeah, I have this computer at a high countertop.
Which is great, right? So that's more and more of that. And you guys have seen me do this all the time because I can't sit still or stand still. I move around a lot as I'm at my desk. I'll go up and I'll go down. And I just do it just because that's the way I am. I'm a fidgety person, but it's a good thing, right? Because I'm up and down on my ankles. I'm moving from side to side. The more of that you can do, the better. I would try some things where you lay on your back and put your feet up at a 45 degree angle and then just do the pumping of the ankles and see if that makes a difference. But if you've got two variables, right? The one is over the last couple of months, if you've been homeward bound and not walking around as much, that's more of a 2 month, kind of 3 month, maybe even 4 month, whatever. But the other is 2 weeks and that something about that environment, there may be something in that environment that's causing your body to react, and maybe the joints overreacted when they had the Fantastic on top of that, but the circulation is reacting. So there you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. But you get a blood pressure cuff, you always want to rule, you know, the obvious stuff out, poke around the liver, you know, see if you feel any tender spots, any swelling in your belly, that kind of stuff, to rule out the more, you know, dramatic stuff, which it unlikely is. You know, but you always feel better when you can say, yeah, it's not that, you know. Any changes in your energy, any changes in your hair, any hair loss, dry skin, constipation?
Funny thing is, the constipation, I had constipation at my, where I was staying previously, and it got much better when I moved to my own apartment 2 weeks ago. So that's interesting. That also might be why I'm detoxing better.
It might be that you're detoxing. Yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking in terms of thyroid type symptoms, it could be the myxedema is related to hyper. I mean, it could go either way, but that's the thing I would look at, is other kinds of thyroids. That's why I asked you both kinds. So constipation, but diarrhea could be indicative of a hyper kind of thyroid. And you can certainly get a test done. You can just do a thyroid test and, you know, do a complete panel just to rule
panel.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you.
So who else has questions, comments? Raise your hand. Oh, I see Leah. Okay, Leah, go for it.
Hello.
Hi.
Dr. Rita-Marie, I've got two questions.
Sure.
One I've never broached before, so it's a new one. I'm sure you're aware of Dr. William Walsh, the Walsh Institute.
Mm-hmm. He does a lot of with methylation and over, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't got my genes back, so I can't confirm, but I'm absolutely really pretty convinced I've probably got an MTHFR going on anyway. But what are your thoughts on, because I love greens, don't get me wrong, I'm not against them, but I feel that if I take quite a concentration of dark green, kale for example, over the course of a week, it really, really drives me down. And I just wondered what your thoughts are on folate and anyone that maybe can't tolerate it particularly well.
Well, is it raw kale or cooked kale? Does it matter?
I always steam it. Yeah.
Always steam it. Okay. So it wouldn't, I'm just thinking in terms of thyroid, right? And the goitrogenic effects that possibly could have with a raw. And then the other options are, it could be, I rarely see people over methylating and getting into like a methyl trapping and all that kind of stuff with excess folate, unless it's a supplement. I rarely see that. Not to say it can't happen. So I'd also be looking at oxalates. And is it make a difference which green? Is it any green? Does it happen with arugula? That would rule out oxalates because there's no oxalates in the arugula.
Well, no, if I eat spinach, literally within, well, definitely the next morning, I'm stiff as I'm like a tin man.
Oxalate sensitivity.
Yeah, and there was a point, although I've managed to get a lot more oral tolerance back, there was a point that I could literally eat broccoli and the inside of my mouth would blister. That's how bad, how sensitive I got. But yeah. I seem to have overcome a lot of that. So that's good. That.
It's the concentration. So I would test it with large amount of arugula and see if the same thing happens, because arugula has zero oxalates. It's one of the few foods that actually has zero oxalates. But it sounds like it might be an oxalate sensitivity.
An oxalate, would that drive depression then? That's my point. It was the
mood. It can drive depression, it can drive joint pain, it can drive kidney stones, and it could drive like deposits in the eyes. There's any number of things that the high oxalate levels, if you're sensitive to it, would drive. So when you get your genes back, you do want to look at MTHFR, but you want to look at, there's some markers, and I don't remember them off the top of my head, but it's an easy Google search for oxalate markers. And then if you haven't had an oat test will test for that. But you can also just get a 24-hour urine test for oxalates to see if there's an overload there. Usually, the reason is, it's a combination of a leaky gut, which allows the oxalates to cross and get into the bloodstream. And then once they're in, if you do have the genetic tendency to be sensitive, you're going to hyperreact, which is really what you're saying. Showing. That's the connection I would make. But I mean, there's other things in greens, but when you said it with spinach is like the highest oxalate one. That's the where I would look first.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, the way I react to certain things, I just try to reintroduce, because I said the ratio with omega-3s for me is quite difficult, because I don't like eating a lot of fish, and I do use algae, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I try to reintroduce some nuts very, very gently, and it just shreds me completely. And
oxalates are high. Nuts are high in oxalates.
Oh, okay.
Nuts are high in oxalates. And when you say shred, that's the thing I think about oxalates, because they're like crystalline things, and that's what they do inside the body.
Yeah, it literally rips me to pieces.
I have a strong feeling it's oxalates. So that's the path I would travel down and go online. There's a really great Facebook group. Mm-hmm. I think it's just low oxalate living. Mm. And they post all kinds of really amazing charts, and there's a lot of great conversation in there. Now you have to be careful about completely removing oxalates if you do decide or determine that you're sensitive, because what happens is you get a dumping kind of reaction. And so the body goes, oh, there's no more of this. Let's dump it all out. And then you can have a symptom flare up. So that would be a great Facebook group. I know that I don't know if any of them are on, Paula or I don't see Dawn on here, but they both, I think it's just low oxalate living, and it's, what's her name? Do you remember Lynn Rose? Paula talks about it. I know where to look. Give me a second.
Okay.
You got the hiccups. I drank my Kavita too fast. Okay, Dawn. She mentioned it.
An oxalate, sorry, the link to kidney stones, did you just say?
Yeah, kidney stones, what's it called? Vulvodynia, pain in the vulva area, unrelated to anything else.
I know it's for me, but again, my dad's had kidney stones, and I seem to be following his genes quite a lot. So.
It may be this genetic tendency. Trying no oxalates, is this the one? I'll recognize the woman's name who runs it. Mm-hmm. It might be this one because there's 30,000 people in it. Yes, Susan Owens. Here it is. I'll give you the link.
Okay.
But definitely check her out. She's really well researched on it, and she has some great resources on this Facebook group. Okay. And check it out and see if you think that's what it is.
And the only other one is, you know, that I've had this ongoing chest pain thing that it literally, you can see me now rather than, but basically it pulls down here. It literally goes under the collarbone, across the chest. I think you're right in as much as it potentially is a trapped nerve, because some days I feel it from my hand all the way through my elbow and up the inside of my arm as well. I can't yet get to see anybody. It just is the way it is. But equally, I'm getting a similar tightness, and it's just like a thin line gap going through the back of my calf muscle. Now, it's not magnesium deficiency, because I've taken that for years and I know that's all okay. And it doesn't have to be, in fact, it kind of goes away when I do exercise, but I can literally get up. I'll be fine when I'm horizontal. I'll get up, I'll stand at the wet sink to do some washing up, and I can feel this pain coming straight away. So, and yet if I eat, it goes away. So that's why I think it's more to do with the also this blood pressure thing that I've obviously got going on.
Yeah.
But this thing in the back of my leg also is mimicking it. And it was only because, again, I thought, is it inflammation? And because of the genetics I seem to be inheriting, is it called scleroderma? My dad's got where your fingers are bent over. He's had to have his fingers
out. Scleroderma is a tightening of the connective tissue. It's a shortening and tightening of the connective tissue.
It certainly
can be, and that could, if the connective tissue is tightening up, that could cause pressure on the nerve, which would cause it to go down your arm. So it certainly can be. I mean, I would do some research on scleroderma just to see, because it'll be lists of stuff, and you go, I have that too. I have that too. Or no, I don't have that at all. I mean, certainly can be. And if your father has it, it is an autoimmune condition.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's AI again. So it's just like another little layer that seems to have
appeared. Right.
Is there anything you know that they would do if it was?
Well, if it's scleroderma and you're talking Western medicine, they'll say, well, take some steroids here. Good luck. Have a good life.
No.
It's not curable. Okay. I mean, right? That's what they do. So, you know, you really have to look at the same as we do with thyroid, right? You look at the leaky gut, got to heal the leaky gut. Look at whatever stressors, whether it's heavy metals, molds, mycotoxins in the environment, mental, emotional stressors, a viral infection, like a chronic low-grade viral infection, sometimes like an EBV or CMV, those kinds of things. It's like, what are the stressors? What's going on with the gut? Really got to clean up that gut. What are the stressors that are triggering this? And is there a viral infection or some other kind of infection that's going on?
Yeah, I have done so much work on my gut, and, you know, obviously with DMC, I know I really, really have worked hard and, you know, all of the other things, but.
And you've done an autoimmune, have you seen my autoimmune phase one protocol that I have? It was in Spring and Vitality a couple of years ago.
No, you
basically, I took, you know, I don't like a lot of the autoimmune diets I see out there, because they load people up with stuff that I just don't think is really good. So I created it based on, you know, elimination of common foods. It does eliminate nuts and all kinds of stuff for a month. And then phase two is where you're gradually reintroducing. So it's kind of like an extreme form of an elimination diet, where you're getting rid of anything that could possibly be triggering, and then you're adding things back slowly. I'll see if I can private message me on Facebook. I'll see if I can find that. It's somewhere on the site in the many, 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 you know, layers of stuff out there.
Okay. Yeah. No, to be fair, I do an awful lot of research outside of your group as well. And I really, really have worked hard on my gut. And it's just that I'm just so super sensitive, as we know, of all the things I've tried to reintroduce. But I just feel that there's something, and I know stress is big, and I know that that's part of it, but it seems to be that this is an inflammation that I just can't shift.
Yeah, I mean, the ways you can test, you get certainly an ANA test could be helpful. Have you ever had an ANA test? It's kind of a generic, I mean, it's usually associated with lupus, but it can be associated with others. I'm not sure what the other tests for it. I know that Cyrex Labs has their Array 5, and you can do individual pieces of that as well. They have a collagen connective tissue kind of section of that, and you can look up to see what those tests are, and maybe you can even just get a local doctor to run it. I don't remember the exact antibodies for that, but it, you just can run autoantibodies. Let's see if I can find it real quick here. Scleroderma. Scleroderma test. No single test for scleroderma, right? Clinical diagnosis, thorough exam and history. Hopkinsmedicine.org has some stuff. I'm looking to see, here's lab tests online if they say anything about. Yeah, so I don't think there's a particular, there might be an antibody. Has an autoimmune, has been associated with exposure to a variety of chemical agents. So there you go again with chemicals. Overproduce collagen. So then it stiffens everything. So some of the tests are ANA. Here, let me just copy this. I'll just give you this this and you can read through it. But there's ANA, like I said, but then there's some other autoantibodies. Let's see if I click that. And it doesn't say particular ones. But I would look for sure at Cyrex Labs, and they'll have a list of what they cover in Array 5. Mm-hmm. And see, so look at the connective tissue ones. Here you
I've got Cyrex account. I've run some of theirs.
So there's a description, and that talks a little bit about it. But ANA, you know, it's more of that, like, you know, waste fast. You don't know when you do that. You know you have an autoimmune thing, but you don't know exactly which one.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you.
You're welcome. Who else? Questions? Comments? Yeah, Lori. Remember, for you, not your patients.
Okay. Yeah, for me. I'm looking at you had given us recently the vitamin and mineral assessments and the hormone and body system assessments. Once we get those totals, what is the direction? Is there like a place where it tells you what to do next? Like, how do we go about correcting them?
Yeah, so that's the big picture. So is that from module 3 in NEPT? Module 3, I think it is.
I'm not sure. You had given it out, I think, at Shine.
I gave it out before. Yeah, so it's looking at it and saying, okay, what are the ones that are showing up high? So, wow, look at my thyroid. Holy cow, my thyroid numbers, I'm showing all kinds of thyroid symptoms. Then I would say getting a thyroid panel just to see what's going on would be a good thing. Adrenals, well, okay, what kind of things can I do for adrenals? Now, you guys in NEPT have access to my entire everything that I do on the personal care program. So I would look at which ones are showing up as high, and anything above 50 needs to be addressed. But also, even if the gut doesn't show up high, but you have other things that show up high, I would address your gut first, right? Look and see the different, and that test gives you different parts of the gut. So you've got pancreas area, you've got the liver, gallbladder, you've got upper GI, lower GI, small intestine, large intestine. So I would look to see if there's particular stuff. I would address the gut first, unless the gut is like, you know, 12 is your total score, in which case, you know, if thyroid is 50, most likely you've got to look at what's going on there. Also, when you think about my pyramid, right, I go up the pyramid. So it's like, which ones do you have that are lower down in the pyramid? Because they're going to affect. So if you've got gut stuff going on or adrenal stuff going on, it's certainly going to affect the thyroid. So that's how I would look at it. And then in terms of how to address it, well, and I have that new little tile on the Unstoppable Health page that's just for NEPTers. So you know exactly what you have, and you can go in there and there's just a plethora of information, all of the programs and all the different things. And so the other thing I would do would be to do, there's an assessment in, you'll have it on that page, on that NEPT page. It goes down, it says my whole body of assessments. There's one for the pillars. So it's looking at the pillars to see what's out of balance here. Am I not having enough fun? Am I not sleeping enough? That kind of stuff. So we always want to address things from the bottom up. The pillars, digestion, blood sugar, adrenals, thyroid, and then the rest. Does that make sense?
Yes. Would you ignore like the vitamins if it's saying like you need A or Bs?
Oh, no. With the vitamins, I would not ignore that. So if you're having symptoms of a deficiency in those vitamins, I would start with looking at, well, how's my food? So personally, I would then chronometer it for like 3 or 4 days, put everything in chronometer, see what I'm getting from my current food. And then if I'm like, oh, A, so I'm showing signs of A, where am I getting my A from? Do I have to supplement or can I get it by adding more food to my diet? Okay. Makes sense? Yeah, I would address all of those. Yeah, but not necessarily like go out and buy a boatload of supplements and start taking 15 supplements because they all show up. If a bunch of the nutrients show up low and you look at your chronometer and you're like, I'm eating fairly decently, then I'm saying, God, absorption. You're not absorbing them real well.
Okay. And then I have one other question about blood glucose.
Mm-hmm.
What is, I know how you do it, teach us to do the 15 minute range. What is the determination of what your number is okay at? So say I start out at say 94 and then I eat something and it goes to like 115 and then maybe it'll shoot up to 130 and come back down again. Is okay. It the length of time that it's up there that is the determinant?
All of the above. Like, so those numbers are not good. Have you done the sweet spot? Have you gone through the sweet spot?
I'm starting it now because I just can't get this to work itself out.
I would go through it like the week one, go through the new week sweet spot. If there's anything additional that you want more information about, you can go back into the old one, but I would go through that week one, week two, and I teach you how to find your peak, what the normal peak would be, what your ideal peak range would be. And then you're actually shooting for, we're all shooting for keeping it under 110 all the time. And that's usually about 45 minutes. Some people it might be a half hour, some people it might be an hour and a half, depending on what you eat, how dense it is in carbohydrate, whether it's slow absorbing carbs, like legumes. You know, some people don't go up at all with legumes, but some people they do, but it takes like an hour and a half and then suddenly it's up because it's a slower absorbing carb. Whereas if you're eating sugar, grapes, you know, which are so sweet, you're going to see it go up much higher and much shorter period of time.
Okay.
Great. Yeah. Go through that. I think that now that you've got this as a nice box and it's all of it accessible from one place, just go through it, you know, little by little. I even have 8 steps to get you started. So run through the 8 steps, then run through, you know, it sounds like if there's some digestive stuff or it sounds like there's some blood sugar stuff, really work on that. Just pick one and work on it. But the nutrients for sure, either get them from food or get them from supplements while you're figuring this whole thing out.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. Who else has questions or comments? I see a lot of people without their hand, without their things on, without their cameras on. There's, oh, Zachary, you don't look like a Zachary. Hi. Oops, unmute yourself. Oh, you are unmuted. Speak. I think you're maybe there's something wrong with your, I just heard you. There you go.
Hello?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Yeah, that's my son. I don't know how to change it.
If you go to your name side and click more, it'll say rename. It'll give you the option. Or actually, right over your picture. Let me put it on mine and see if I can do it. Yeah, if you just click the 3 dots, if you hover your mouse over your picture, there's 3 dots. And then you scroll down and it says rename and you can rename yourself.
I'll do that. I sent in a question, or 2 questions actually, on the RSVP form.
I don't know. An RSVP form for this program. Let me go back. Nobody told me that they created. I usually just have those for our ERC. Okay, so let's go here. Office hours. There you go. You did. Okay, let's see. Oh, no, that's Marcy. Let's see. Here. Oh, there's a few of them. I didn't even know they did that.
Mine's under Lisa.
Rose.
I can just ask them.
Yeah, you can just ask it. Now that I know that they're putting them in there, I had no idea. Lisa from Everyday Hormones. Got it. Thanks so much for the opportunity. I have 2 questions. I eat a plant-focused, lower-carb, whole foods diet, avoid sugar and flour, and exercise 6 days a week. Congratulations. Good job. My diet includes healthy whole food sources of fat, little oil, as not a whole food, right? Even though high cholesterol runs in my family, my lipid panels have always been good until now. Here's the latest labs. Cholesterol 259, HDL 97, LDL 144, triglycerides 81, 91, 90, okay. Should be concerned, try to lower my fat intake. Well, how long have you been doing the higher fat Oh, wait, you're also on levothyroxine. So you have a thyroid issue, which generally speaking will affect cholesterol levels, but 30 years, but you still have symptoms. Okay. Doctor put you on nature thyroid, hopeful because the blood work indicates I may have issues with T3, however, not feeling any differently. Told to expect heart palpitations as it adjusted, but nothing happening. So a couple of things. You mentioned about the some of those supplement companies, the nature thyroid and whatever, Armour Thyroid and all that, that they have. I've seen a lot of variation from batch to batch to batch, and there's used to be consistent and now it's not. So that's not uncommon. But from what you're saying to me, it sounds to me like you might have a thyroid resistance issue, like your cells have become resistant to the thyroid. Now, without seeing your labs, I don't know, because I don't know how functionally they were interpreted and the proportion between T4 and T3, et cetera. But you might have a thyroid resistance. And when I teach people to get their thyroid balanced, like in our Thyroid Revive and Thrive class, what I usually teach is that always assume you have thyroid resistance, because here's the deal. It won't even show up on labs. You said, even though the labs look better, you're not feeling better. That's a real hallmark to me that there's probably some thyroid resistance. So a few things that you can look at for that. Low vitamin A. Vitamin A is super important for those receptors to work properly. A lot of people have a particular genetic SNP. That's what the average person will call a defect. It's not really a defect. It's just a variation in your genes called BCM01. Have you ever gotten your Yeah, so BCM01 will make it harder for you to be able to convert from beta carotene, which you have plenty of based on what you described as your diet, to vitamin A, right? And if you're not eating a lot of animal products that have pure form, you're not eating fish or cod liver oil or any of that, and you're taking in a lot of beta carotene, then it may not be converting. So that's one place to look. Another thing to look at is your homocysteine level. So have them do it if they haven't already done it. High homocysteine will interfere with the thyroid ability, that the cell's ability to take in the thyroid hormone. So I would look there. Third is stress. So high levels or low levels of cortisol will interfere with the uptake of those receptors. So those are important. And then the last one, I thought of it as I was saying that, now it jumped out of my mind. Inflammation. So inflammatory cytokines. Sometimes it's from that, again, overactive adrenal. You're under a lot of stress, you're producing a lot of cortisol, and there's a lot of these chemicals called cytokines that get produced. And so those are the things I would look at. You can look at your labs and see if your C-reactive protein, highly sensitive, C-reactive protein HS, highly sensitive, if that's elevated at all, or the there's a couple of others that you can look at, but those are the things that I would look at. In terms of seeing if anything makes it better, if it's inflammatory, there's some little things you can do to your diet, like increase the anti-inflammatory foods, increase your omega-3 fats, increase ginger and turmeric, and see if that makes any difference.
Okay. How much fresh turmeric is okay to eat? Because I buy the root and I put it.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. I think it's kind of one of those foods that it's kind of hard to overeat. Like, you know, it's easy to overeat chocolate. It's easy to overeat macadamia nuts and almond butter, but it's really hard to overeat turmeric. So unless you're putting in like this big old piece into your smoothies, but then your smoothies taste awful, you know? But yeah. This little bit, this is about what I do. A little piece like that, and I put it in smoothies every day, and that should be fine. Yeah, certain foods are hard to overeat, wouldn't you agree? Unless you have a major sensitivity. That, and I think turmeric's one of them.
Okay. My C-reactive protein, I did recently have that done. It's 1.1, so it's a tiny bit higher.
A little bit higher than I would like to see. Given what you just told me about your diet and how clean it is, I would expect your C-reactive protein to be like, I like to see it 0.2 or 0.3. Okay, so 0. There's some inflammation going on.
Okay.
Right?
And can I give you my thyroid levels with that?
I would have to write them down because I can't do it in my head. Okay, tell me what they are. Okay. Total T4 first.
Let's see. see. Well, T4 free is 1.3.
Okay.
TSH
is
0.32. It's quite low.
Low. Mm-hmm.
And T3 is 2.4.
Okay, you have a conversion issue, number one. What about total T4? Do we have that?
See that one.
My pet peeve is hardly anybody runs it, and I think it's critical to know where some of it happens, but I see this right away. Your free T4 and free T3 ratio is way, 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 way off. So your body's not converting T4 to T3. And again, that goes back to if there is a receptor issue, stress. So too much or too little cortisol will affect that conversion as well as affect the receptors. So I would look at that. Selenium is a super important nutrient for that. Yeah, selenium is a super important nutrient. So you can get that from Brazil nuts by including a couple of Brazil nuts a day in your diet on average, or taking a selenium supplement. Magnesium is important there. Iron's important there. There's, you know, just overall mineral balance is important there. But the main one would be selenium. And then the stress the other issues are that T4 to T3 conversion doesn't happen in the thyroid. It happens in various places in the body. So about 50% of it happens in the liver. So if there's any kind of liver congestion or liver sluggishness, it could happen it could be that the conversion's not happening as well. 25% of it happens in your gut. So if you have any kind of gut dysfunction, leaky gut, dysbiosis, candida overgrowth, any of that kind of stuff, that can affect that conversion as well. And then the other 25% happens, you know, kind of all over in your skin and your kidneys and other places. So those are the things I would look at.
Do people do better with, I know you can get like a T4 and a time release T3 that's synthetic, it's not the natural. Is that a good idea, or is it better to stick with the natural?
Yeah, I think that really T4 and T3, when you're supplementing them, it's not really bioidentical. Or they're all the same. It's not like progesterone, where it's progesterone and progestin, and it's a completely different molecule. Or like, you know, estrogen and all that, like they're just actually synthetic. And I don't think that's true of the thyroid as much. You've got Cytomel, which is just set stuff, and they've got all kinds of additives. So anything that's compounded is going to work better. It's a little tricky. I don't want to give you some advice that, you know, you can run with and then not really have the full picture. But yes, if you're already on compounded right now.
Now I'm just on the Nature Joy, but it's the first couple months. I've always been on levothyroxine, which is the T4 only.
Which is just
that's why I thought I would feel better with the natural stuff, but I'm actually feeling more, like my heart rate went down quite a bit. My resting heart rate, pretty significant.
Yes.
I don't know, it's just not the right dose.
It might not be the right dose. Your T3, your TSH is rather low. It's 0.32 is rather low. I mean, I like to see it, if you're on meds, anywhere from 0.5 to 1.5 would be more appropriate. I think you might be over-medicated, but it's not getting in. So my concern would be that that's why I like to see total T4, because that's what would be in the supplement, and protein gets pulled off. So I think that, you know, what your body is seeing is that T4 being high. And it's going, oh, you're fine. Yeah, we don't need it. You know, we don't need to stimulate your thyroid. And that's the rut we get into when we're supplementing, right? So it really would take it a step further. Have you had antibodies tested? Have you had thyroglobulin? And where are they at?
I don't know the levels, but I have had them tested. I was told it was
zero? Are they zero?
I don't know. It was a long time ago that I had it done.
Yeah, find out the levels, because the Western medical lab ranges, they'll say, oh, it's 34, you're fine. No, it should be under 10, at least for the TPO. And then the antithyroglobulin should be lower than that still, like 1 or 2. All right, so you could have some autoimmune going on. And if you don't address the autoimmune, so gut seems to be a connection, right, between the conversion, the thyroid conversion, and the autoimmune. So really looking at your gut in detail. Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. All right, who else? I see Sharon has her hand up. Hi, Sharon.
I just have a very quick question.
Sure.
One day on Facebook, I posted about Revive essential oils.
Oh, you know what? I meant to get back to you. I started looking at it. Then they started following me around because I went to their website, and everywhere I go on Facebook, I'm seeing an ad for them. As far as I can tell, they look really good. There's a lot of good words about them. I haven't personally checked them out or checked their resources out, but they're organic, right? Didn't they say they're organic? Yeah. Which most of them aren't. Most of them aren't. And they look like, if I didn't have a whole stash of doTERRA sitting on my shelf, I'd probably check a few of them out and just see.
Because they did say they're third party tested as well.
Yeah, it looked really good. It did look really good. And the prices were way better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm currently using Young Living, and they're certainly a better price than Young Living.
They're very pricey. Yeah. I would try. I mean, if you have something you really like from Young Living, I would get something that you already have. And I would get one and then compare the smell. Compare, like if you have one that really works well, it puts you to sleep, relaxes you, whatever, eases pain, I would use both of them and see if there's a difference.
Okay.
But they look, I mean, it looks like they say all the right things. And I just didn't want to go back and say, oh, because I haven't been able to fully research and look at all their stuff. But third-party certified organic, and most of the others aren't. Right. The others that I like are Living Libations. They're really clean and pure. And then the other ones that are, it's the blue, what does she call? It's Jody Cohen's line, blue, vibrant blue oils. Hers are also very, they use very small farms, and they're organic. So I know her personally, and her stuff's good, but I don't know that she has the full line.
Okay.
But she has good stuff too.
Yeah. And on this website, they also did a comparison in brand names between theirs and Young Living. You know, like with Thieves, they had something, a different name, but it was comparable.
Yeah, I saw that. Right. And yes. So they have a similar set of herbs in them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Set of oils in them. I like Thieves. I'm an agnostic when it comes to brands for those things. I just like look for what's good. I know that On Guard and Thieves from both Young Living and doTERRA work really well. I mean, I know they work really well. So, and oregano and that kind of stuff. Lynn.
I'm just going to say, you've got to make sure that they're extracted properly too, because that's where most of the problems is. They add different chemicals sometimes to extract. Some are steam distilled and some are chemically distilled. And so you have to make sure. I always worry about low prices. I distill oils, and I know what it takes to do it, and it's not cheap. So when too low, I worry about, you know, how they're really, if they're cutting it, even if it's organic, it can still be cut.
It can still be cut. Have you looked at them? Have you ever heard of them? It's Revive, right?
I use Young Living. I've used them for 30-something years, so.
Yeah.
But I don't use that many oils.
Yeah.
So how should they be distilled?
Well, most are steam distilled. There's only a few things that require a different kind of distillation, but most are steam distilled. But a lot of times they, to get a little bit faster, more done, they'll use different kind of chemical extractors. And that's there's been a battle with essential oils for as long as they've been around.
Mm-hmm.
They slam each other and they break off from each other and
I know.
Tell bad names about everybody. And so I look at, I don't look at the price, because that's, you do have to kind of weigh in the fact that it does cost to do that. It's not a cheap process.
With the Revive, they're not multi-level marketing. So that's where they see
cuts down a lot.
It's personal preference too. Like I love Valor with Young Living. I can't stand it from some of the other companies. So every company, their smells are different too.
That's why I said, get something you really like and get them side by side. Right. And sometimes you can tell if there's something artificial put in there. It just has a slightly off smell. And you may not notice it just smelling it on its own. But when you compare it to one that you're used to, you might notice that little weird kind of smell.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll do that. Yeah. Thank you for input from both of you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't get back to you right away, but you said, whenever somebody sends me on a path to research something and ask, it's like, oh, but I have to look at this then. I'm not sure yet. Let me look at that. And then they started following me around on Facebook. They did some retargeting stuff and I saw their ads all over the place. So
yeah.
Worth a look at, you know, don't invest a lot of money in it. Just, you know, buy one or two and see what happens and see what you think.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Sharon. Who else? Questions or comments? Let's see let me look in the chat.
Dr. Rita Marie?
Yeah.
I just wanted to say I've finished the IRSPT modules and I've got my second interview, as in you want the voice, you know, the recording one, and then I'll get the two case studies. So they'll be up next week.
Yay.
I did actually send a quick message to Annette. I won't bore you with it. I can't get my recording off my phone onto my Mac to upload it onto the file loader. So is there an email address I could send that voice recording? Could I email it directly from my phone?
You can try, but here's the thing, it's the size. So it depends on how long it is. And if it's a big file, like if it's over 20 megabytes, most email servers won't take it. If you can try to send it to coaching@drritamarie.com and see if it goes. But like I said, if it's over, it's a big file, see if there's a way to compress it. And the other way to do it is to do Dropbox or Google. So just get a free Dropbox account or a free Google Drive account and then upload your thing to it. And Google has those apps and so does Dropbox for the phone. So that you can just do it. That's how I do. But I, you know, if I'm sending a photo from my phone, I just send it via email that way. But if it's a larger file, like I've done a recording on there, I've had to dump it off to a Google Drive or a Dropbox
in order to get it. YouTube.
It's 12 megabytes.
Can you do that for audio too?
I've done videos. I haven't tried doing an audio, but
I bet you could. I bet you can upload it. That's a good idea. Upload it to YouTube. Make sure you set it that the setting is that it's not private or private or unlisted, either one, but not public. That way somebody will go find your case study somewhere.
I didn't put any names in it. Yeah, no, I've just looked. It's 12.3 megabytes.
Oh, you should be able to try sending it to coaching@drritamarie.com. It should go through. I've done as many as 20, and after that, it just gets, and they don't even tell you it's too big. It just gets lost in oblivion. It never comes through.
Okay, I'll try it. I've already done the permissions thing, and I've said a note in there, so I'll try it, and hopefully the two will get married up. So, yeah.
Great, thank you.
Have you thought about your speakers that are joining you at Shine?
Yes, so we're not doing the live.
No.
We need to announce it if we can. But we are going to do the same event. And I've already got Tom O'Brien committed. And I've been talking to a couple of others. And Terry Walls wasn't going to be able to make it if it was live because she has another speaking engagement. But if it's remote, she's more likely going to be able to do it because she doesn't have to fly to two places. She can just get on the Zoom. So that's what I have so far.
Great. Okay.
Good. Yeah. I'm excited.
Thank you.
Sharon, did you put your name up, hand up again, or did I just not put it down? Oops, unmute. There you go.
I looked on Revive web page, and they are steam distilled.
They are steam distilled.
Yeah. So is that what I should be avoiding then, steam distilled?
No, you want steam distilled. Okay. You don't want chemical solvents.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
There were a couple of exceptions, but for the most part, they are steam distilled.
Perfect. And there may be some exceptions because you can't steam distill certain ones, right? Right. And it's just a matter of what do they use as solvents or do you just avoid those? What would you say about that, Lynn? Would you just avoid the ones that are not steam distilled or are there specific solvents that are okay?
I'm not sure how they do it without using on some particular oils, but I don't have enough expertise on those. Everything I've ever done has been steam distilled. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you grow the plants and then... Do the extract?
You've got to have an enormous amount of plants. And I'd have to take every plant in my yard to make, you know, a quarter ounce of oil. So I usually order, you know, the dry sifted herb or flowers.
Oh, okay. You can do it with the dried. You don't have to do it with fresh.
Interesting.
You're not supposed to use fresh when you do the distillation.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know anything about this process, so that's cool.
There's a bunch of videos on my YouTube, Facebook.
Do you? Yeah. All right, I have to look. You're just like the Amazon woman that does a little bit of everything. Thank you. Who else? Anybody else have questions or comments? Anything you need help with? Let me look to see if there's here. Lori just confirming nuts and oxalates. I put in the triangle oxalates. I put in the lab thing. And Lisa, that was before I spoke to you. Okay, cool. All right. Yeah, now that I know that there are, there's an RSVP for these calls, I'll check that before I get on. I didn't know. We used to, because this used to be a call where we just showed up on the phone and and we just recently changed it. So I like this better. I like it a lot better. Who's been on them before and thinks, what do you think? Like it better? Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's better. Good. Good.
Sorry, I just wanted to say, Dr. Rita Marie, I had a form sent through to me, but I think that that's come up for vital next week. So you've answered my questions tonight. So.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to look to see what I have. I saw a couple of others when I saw it. Some of them were just RSVP. Yeah, I'm going to be there. No, I'm not. And it helps me to know which program
you're in. You finally covered what I wrote in my question.
Marcy said she's coming. Yeah. But she didn't have a question. And then Mia and... Okay, did you get enough about that with the hypothyroid and hypotension based on the other stuff, Mia? Yes, about...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was hesitant to bring it up because the way you started the call, you said it's only... we should only be asking questions for ourselves here. So that was a question about my mom. But yeah, that thyroid information was super insightful, how it's related to liver congestion and certainly clues I can help my mom, start with and look for.
And go through, you have access to all of the programs. So go through.
Yeah. But it's sometimes hard to know where to start. I mean, obviously always with digestion, but just because she's working with a medical practitioner. So we were talking about what tests to get her. And so, it was more about like, what should I put on the list of tests? I mean, from that conversation, I did CRP, homocysteine. I know her homocysteine has been high in the past. So for sure, that's a clue.
Yeah, that's a clue for sure. And homocysteine, when it's elevated, could indicate that there's a low level of B6, B9, or B12. So B6, folate, or B12. And so that's an important thing to look at. You don't always know explicitly. You also look at MCV. And MCV is either B6. It really doesn't relate to B6. So it would help rule it down to folate and B12. And then if there's, here's one thing I have. Here's a clue for anybody who wants it. For looking at your labs, if you have a really high, good iron level, I don't mean excessively high, but I mean, it's really hefty and good. And you have low hemoglobin. It could be, it likely is related to B6 because B6 is required to cleave that and take the iron and put it on the hemoglobin molecule. So, there you go. All right. Anything else? If not, we'll call it a day. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Lisa.
A quick follow-up. So I know that cholesterol levels can be high with hypothyroidism, and that is probably going on. But with the numbers that I have, should I cut down on my fat? I would say my diet's been a little bit higher fat the past year.
You said it's all whole food, plant-based fat. It's not, Are you doing a lot of coconut? You're not doing a lot of coconut oil or coconut?
A little bit to saute, but like I said, I try to, I eat my salads plain. I'll put some pumpkin seeds and stuff like that.
But. Yeah, I'm looking back at your numbers again. Your cholesterol, your HDL is good. Your HDL triglyceride ratio is good. Otherwise, I'd say start looking at your sugars. Here's the thing. It's your non-HDL cholesterol that's high. The thing I would do to really check it out would be to get an advanced lipid panel. And that's going to look at buoyancy and particle sizes and all that to tell you if you're at risk. Because you have that elevation, a little bit elevated CRP, I'd look at homocysteine as well.
What is that called again?
Homocysteine. Homocysteine. Yeah, that's what I would look at too. And then if all that pans out, that it looks good, then probably fine. If you see any other things there, then a calcium scan is actually a good thing to do. And that's it's kind of like a very low radiation CT scan that actually looks at the arteries. It's very quick, very easy, very inexpensive test. I actually sent my husband off to do that because he got his cholesterol back and it was like around yours. And he was like, I don't get it. What could I have been doing all this time? And he isn't even eating a lot of fat. And I said, I'm really looking at your family and your history. I think it's a genetic because your C-reactive protein's fine. Hemoglobin A1C is fine. All of these other things were fine. So I said, go get a calcium scan and let's actually look to see what's going on in there. And it came out beautiful. So he's like, who cares about the cholesterol, right? At this point, there's no other risk factors. I don't care. It's just a number on a piece of paper. And if my genes predispose me to having it high, but he's doing all this lifestyle stuff to keep it healthy. So those are all the things you could do to kind of rule it out. Homocysteine, advanced lipid panel. And then if all that comes out kind of weird and you're looking for more answers, a calcium score.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Omega-3s, you mean, Lynn? Yeah, and you know, looking at your diet, I'm a big fan these days of Chronometer. Get the app, you mop what you're doing. You may have an omega-3-6 out of balance, right? Even whole foods fats still can cause that imbalance if you're eating a lot of almonds and almond butter and, you know, pecans and things like that. That could cause it to be out of balance. So that's a great point. Look at the omega-3-6 ratio. Awesome. Anybody else? Anybody else have anything to share or add? Or I love having you on these calls, Lynn, because you always come up with great perspectives. You do. Yeah. Omega-3.
Sorry, Dr. Rita Marie. Just one more perspective. On you just mentioned iron levels. So at one point, my iron levels and ferritin were reasonably high, actually. There was something like, I think it was like 60 or something like that, the ferritin, off the top of my head. But anyway, it dropped to 18. And the
gastrin, or just one and not the other? Because that
no, the ferritin.
The ferritin dropped. What about the iron?
But it didn't show just iron for some reason. I don't know why. They just got the
ferritin. They don't do it because they're not functional. You got to have iron and ferritin, because if you just look at one and not the other, you go, oh, iron is low. We must have an iron deficiency. You load up on iron and then you look at the ferritin and it's high. You didn't need to load up on iron. There's a problem with the storage, the mechanism. It's not pulling it, you know, it's not pulling from the storage. So, you know, high iron, high ferritin is, you know, something where you want to be looking at something like hemochromatosis or a tendency towards that, but it's an iron overload disease. Mm-hmm. Low iron, low ferritin is an iron deficiency. High iron, low ferritin, or low iron, high ferritin, that's something else. And it could be related to liver. It could be related to melatonin as one of the hormones that is a conversion factor in there. So it's super important. And I talk to my colleagues all the time about this, and we sometimes, well, you just need one or the other. They used to just measure iron. Like whenever you went to the doctor, they just measure iron. Then they got wise and said, oh, but the ferritin is the storage form. So if that's low, it's going to get low before the iron gets low. Great. That's a good point, right? So you get an earlier warning. But if I've seen people with super high iron, like 180, and super low ferritin, like 30, 20, 10, that's not an iron deficiency. That's not an iron excess. That's a metabolic imbalance in the conversion from iron into ferritin. Turns out it's the ferrous to ferric form, and melatonin is one of the things. So tidbit here, melatonin, low melatonin would create that. So it's just, that's why I like functional tests. That's why I want to look at all the different things in relationship to each other, not just one low or one high.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And he said to me, he said, you're just within range, but I can give you some iron tablets. I said, no, thanks very much. And I didn't take them. And then the other thing I then read was under an immunologist, he said, actually high ferritin, without taking into account what you've just said, could just show inflammation.
Inflammation, right. and especially liver. So liver inflammation or general inflammation.
It's so I thought that was then good that I maybe had brought inflammation down, and that's why my ferritin levels had dropped. But you know,
you get the iron done too, and then you'll be able to see. And you also can look at hemoglobin and hematocrit. Because those are going to be related to the levels of iron. And if they're low as well, and your ferritin's low, my suspicion would be an iron deficiency anemia. Oh,
my white blood cells really dropped by like a third. They went down to like 160 or something like that. So
I don't know the UK numbers, because we're like a 1 to 10. Like the range for white blood cells is something like 4 to 8 or something like that.
So. I know we have different units, but
we have different units.
I think that was just because there was, you know, an infection or whatever. But no, the ferritin was really interesting because they didn't pick it up. I picked it up, and then he said, "Oh, well, I'll give you something." And I said, "No, thanks."
That's the problem with the conventional approach to looking at labs. They just pick up what the lab says. This is the normal range, and even if it's at the high end or low end, or even just over. They're like, it's nothing. Wait a minute. You have to be way off to even get there, because the functional ranges for most are going to be much tighter. So if you're at the high end of the lab range, you probably have something going on that you need to go. Because here's the thing. If you're outside of the lab range, there's generally more than just a metabolic functional thing going on. It could actually be a physiologic thing. It could be a liver, you know, fatty liver. It could be some sort of, you know, damage to a certain system. So we're really looking when we teach, when I teach lab analysis, which is like a lot of time in the ERC in the NEPT program, I teach people how to look at those levels and all the different relationships between them. Because it's so important.
That's not in level one, is it? That's not in the module one. Is that further
down? It's not in level one. Yeah. You got to get your basics down before we get to that. So level one is actually, let's see, and you should be in the whole program. So you and I should talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the level one is your overview of all the hormones and how they all relate to each other. It's the mitochondria and how we produce energy and what nutrients and all are related to that. It's the history taking. Huge piece of that is history taking. Then we have this whole section on all the different the pillars, you know, how do you balance the pillars, and very deep dive into nutrition. There's like four modules on nutrition. So that's module five is that. Module six, what's four? Four is that. And then five is trying to remember what five is. Oh, five is like food, putting together food plans. Six is food allergies and elimination diets. Seven is all the nutrients related to the food, how to balance the food related to nutrients, kind of like what we were talking about to Lori earlier, when you're looking at those reports and how do you look at what foods. And then the last of that before IRSPT eight is, it's the foods related to particular conditions. So, or systems. So eating for thyroid health, eating for adrenal health, eating for gut health, you know, that kind of thing. There's about eight of those different sub things. And then nine is in IRSPT. So if you go into that, you'll get credit for your IRSPT for sure.
Yeah.
But if you want to chat about it, I'd love to share more.
Yeah, no, great. Thank you.
Great. You're welcome. Anybody else? All right. I'll take off, and we'll see you next month on this call again in a month. And it was great. I love being able to see everybody. It's really nice. So take care, everybody. Bye. I'll unmute you all. You can all say goodbye. Bye. 1, 2, 3. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.